Welcome to the Asbury First United Methodist Church Weekly Sermon. We hope you enjoyed this message by Stephen Cady. For more information about this podcast or other ways to connect, please visit asburyfirst.org.
I will pour out my spirit on all flesh. Your children shall prophesy, your elders shall dream dreams, your youth shall see visions. Where does a dream begin? Where did yours begin? Do you remember a moment when a particular dream came to you, when you knew that you wanted to teach or preach or help other people or travel or become a yo-yo master? Whatever it is that you have ever dreamed of, where did that dream begin? Maybe we remember, and maybe we don't. But few of us would say that it came out of nowhere. No, it came from somewhere, surely. So where did that dream begin? Where did your dream begin? On Wednesday, Asbury First will celebrate our 203rd anniversary. That's the paper one, right? We will have celebrated 203 years together. And look around. We wouldn't be where we are today without the dreams of so many who came before us. Some we can name and some we can't. The more recent ones, of course, we know. The dream of serving our neighbors through a community outreach center. More on that next week. The dream of a village green where people could gather after the service for that became our gathering center. The dream of an air-conditioned sanctuary after a faint-prone wedding 20 years ago this summer. The dream of a meal service, of a clothing closet, of a medical clinic. The dream of a place to train children in the faith that became our education wing. The dream of a house of God on East Avenue that became this church in which so many of us now sit. We've told so many of those stories through the years, haven't we? I've preached about them, and some of you have even managed to stay awake through some of it. We know some of these stories, but in this season in which we dream together again as a church about both who we are and who God is calling us to be, in this season in which we look across the landscape, the religious landscape of our world, and it feels a lot like Ezekiel's dream of that valley of dry bones as we just wait for God to breathe life into us again. In this season in which it's becoming harder and harder to truly believe that what is not what has to be. Maybe it makes sense to go back to the beginning, to consider the origins of our dreams. Not, of course, from a scientific perspective, though that might be interesting, but a theological perspective, a teleological perspective, that is to stop just for a moment during this week, the second week of our sermon series on dreaming, to at least consider for a moment where the dream for Asbury First United Methodist Church began. On September 20th, 1820, a ragtag group of 30 individuals gathered in a schoolhouse on Fitzhugh Street, described as, quote, their usual place, and decided to incorporate as First Wesleyan Methodist Episcopal Church in the village of Rochester. It just flows trippingly off the tongue. The Reverend Orrin Miller, who would become our first senior minister, gave a sermon that day, and people reported being moved by the music. Not much has changed. The names, of course, are unfamiliar to us. Abelard Reynolds, Elam Smith, Dan Rowe, amongst others. These are people whose names we may not recognize, whose stories have been lost to time, and yet without their dreams, we wouldn't be where we are today. We even record in our history that the only black resident in Rochester was a member here. Now, it turns out that's not true. He was not the only black resident of Rochester at the time. See my sermon from February 2nd, 2020. And yet there is something hopeful about even that notion, that built into our very foundation as a church was some notion that we can't fully be who God is calling us to be without all of God's children present, a dream we very much still have in front of us today. We tell these stories every year right around this time. We start at September 20th, 1820, and look forward, and it is quite a story. The story of fires and foreclosures, of buildings being auctioned off on the steps of City Hall, of ministers who went on to form Boston University and Northwestern University, of splits and mergers, of coming back together, of seasons in which we had nothing, and seasons of great generosity and moments when it felt, looking around, like these dry bones would never live again. And then the Spirit moved. In other words, friends, it is the story of 203 years of dreamers like you, like me, like us. But where did their dream begin? Surely they didn't just go to bed on September 19th, 1820, and dream of a church that they'd start the next day. No, that had to come from somewhere. And we want to know, did Elam Smith and Dan Rowe finally end their feud and bring people together to form a church? Did Abelard Reynolds put down the drink and pick up his Bible to form the church? Did something else happen that we just don't know about that we'd love to be able to tell a story about, a story that unfortunately we just don't know? And yet there's something hopeful about even that, isn't there? Because here's the thing about a dream. We don't have to know who shared it for it to still have an impact on us. That is, think of your own family just for a moment. How many generations back can you tell the names and the stories? And yet, here you are. Life is a little like that. Just not knowing the stories doesn't change where we find ourselves. In other words, part of the good news of God's grace is that dreams outlast us. Long after we're gone, long after we've turned into that valley of dry bones, God has a way of still breathing life into us. So long as the Spirit is at work, so long as we have embraced that dream and shared it to the best of our ability in the moment we have, they have a way of taking on a life of their own, regardless of if they ever remember our name or our story. That's not to say we don't know any of the stories. We do know some of how we got to this place. Maybe you remember the story of Abelard Reynolds. Most of us do. He was the man who moved with his family to the village of Rochester in 1813 and bought two plots of land right at the Four Corners area of the city. They were two swampy pieces of land that he did his best to make use of, eventually forming the Reynolds Arcade. We know that it was Abelard Reynolds was one of the 30, something about the number 30 keeps popping up in this. He was one of the 30 who were mustered during the War of 1812, which, despite the name, lasted for 2.5 years. He was one of those 30 mustered to march all the way up in the middle of the night to Charlotte to defend our shores from a British invasion. He was one of three who got into a rowboat alongside one of the future first superintendents of our Sunday school. They got into a rowboat and rowed out under the cloak of fog to reconnoiter the British fleet, only to have the fog lift and suddenly find themselves right in the musket firing line, and they quickly rowed back to the shore. Who knows, maybe it was that moment that near-death experience that gave him a new lease on life, that gave him, that afforded him the opportunity to dream. We know that when those things happen in our own lives, maybe some of us are facing them right now, it often changes our perspective on things. We don't know. What we do know is that when the time came to host that first class meeting that became those small groups that you could join this fall as well if you wanted, one of those small groups called a class meeting, when it came time to host it, it was hosted at the Reynolds home. Now, there is some debate about whether it happened in 1816 or 1817, depending on which resource you are reading, but two things we know for sure. Abelard Reynolds was there, and the class meeting was the idea of none other than Francis Asbury. Maybe that name sounds familiar. Now, I said in a sermon a few years ago that we had no information about Francis Asbury being in this neck of the woods, in these neck of the woods. It turns out, as with most things I say, I was completely wrong on that. I found an article just a little while ago that helped reveal that not only did Francis Asbury come to this area, but his fingerprints are all over everything that we have done. That is, we wouldn't be here without the dream of Francis Asbury. In 1809, Francis Asbury arrived with his traveling partner, Henry Boehm, whose father started Otterbein College, who came to this area on horseback. This was a point in Francis Asbury's life in which he could no longer move on his own. He would have to be taken off the saddle, brought, carried into the church, propped up into the pulpit, give his sermon, and then be carried back out and tied to his horse and sent on his way again. The story goes that in 1809, he made it here to the Genesee Valley, and he looked out over the Genesee Valley, and he said to Henry, "Henry, something is not right here. Something is not right here." He saw the world as it was and noticed that something was off. What it was that he noticed, we don't know. Maybe an experience, he said. Maybe someone looked at him the wrong way. Maybe it was just a feeling, but there was something. Having looked around at the world like Miss Clavel in the middle of the night, he recognized something was not right. But he didn't just stop there. He had an idea, a dream. He said to Henry, "There needs to be a Genesee conference," which is church speak for there has to be a Methodist presence in this area, which was how, on July 20th, 1810, that very next summer, 63 traveling preachers and two bishops gathered together 30 miles east of here in Lyons, New York, in a barn and formed the Genesee Conference. And from that conference, they sent all of those traveling preachers out to form small groups, class meetings. Again, you could join one this fall if you wanted to. And it was from those that eventually, in 1816 or 1817, depending on which source you read, that the first group that eventually formed Asbury First was created. Do you hear? Without the dream of Francis Asbury, we wouldn't be here. Nor, as it turns out, would many other churches. Some will know that Francis Asbury, when he arrived in the American colonies in September of 1771, there were about 600 people total that would consider themselves Methodist in this area, in the entirety of the American colonies. By the time he died 45 years later, in 1816, on March 31st, there were about 200,000 Methodists. From 600 to 200,000 Methodists during his lifetime, the 45 years he was here in the American colonies in the nascent United States, he traveled over 130,000 miles on horseback, but often on foot, trying to share the good news of Jesus Christ with anyone who would listen. He never had a home, he never had a family, And he couldn't preach to save his life, according to him. That is, he lamented having to work for days and days and days on a sermon only to stand up and still put people to sleep. Some of us feel his pain. But he had the love of God made known in Jesus Christ and a dream about sharing it with the world. And share he did. By the time he died, he was said to have been better known by face than any other early American. More than George Washington, more than Thomas Jefferson, because he was everywhere. When he died, he only had two possessions, and he willed them to Bishop McKendry, his horse and his books. And a young traveling preacher was given the task of taking them across the Allegheny Mountains to the new bishop. And while he was traveling, that young preacher was set upon by two bandits, people who wanted to rob them. Seeing the horse with the saddles, convinced that there was silver in it, they demanded the money, whatever it carried, at which point the young preacher said, "I have nothing here except the effects of the recently deceased Bishop Asbury," at which point one of the robbers got a guilty look in his face and looked down and said, "Bishop Asbury is dead? I knew him. I heard him preach in my father's house," and then galloped away. Dreams have a way of outlasting us, but we have to share them. We could continue to go back, of course, to John and Charles Wesley and their dream that sent Francis Asbury to the American colonies in the first place. We could, of course, go back even further to the dream of Susanna Wesley, whose idea it was to form small groups, these class meetings outside of the worship service itself in the evenings for the edification of the soul, or any number of the thousand dreamers that came before, all the way back to the chief dreamer of our faith, Jesus the Christ, who we don't always speak about in this way, but who had a dream that maybe someday we would live in a world in which we all finally and fully love God and love neighbor as ourself, and in so doing come alive, not at death, but right now. A dream that's sort of like Ezekiel and those dry bones finding life, just waiting for the breath of God to breathe into us. It is a dream that has yet to be fully realized. But so long as we have breath, friends, it is a dream that we are charged with keeping alive. We may not see it come to fruition in our lifetime, but the good news of our faith is that we don't have to. Because if we have learned nothing else in the last 203 years as a congregation, it is this: our dreams outlast us. Look around, friends. Like Francis Asbury, it doesn't take a whole lot to recognize that something's not right in our world. And if we want it to be better, if we believe truly that what is not what has to be, then we have a responsibility for sharing it, for sharing whatever dream is in our heart or mind. Maybe you want to put it on the dream board. Maybe you want to put it online. Maybe you want to share it with the people who are around you so that maybe we can change this world. And who knows? If we do it well, then maybe 203 years from now, on our 406th anniversary as a church, there may come a time when people just like us are sitting in a place similar to this, or wherever we are in that moment, struggling to share our names or our stories, but giving thanks to God for our dreams. Where does a dream begin? Right where the last one left off. "I will pour out my spirit on all flesh. Your children shall prophesy. Your elders shall dream dreams. And your youth shall see visions."
May it be so. Amen.
Thank you for listening to the Asbury First Weekly Sermon. If you enjoyed this message, please visit asburyfirst.org and learn more about our mission to love God and neighbor, live fully, serve all, repeat.